Morning, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us here for the half-year results for Whitehaven Coal for 2016. As usual, I'm joined here by Jamie Frankham, our Head of Operations, CFO Kevin Ball, and Ian McAleese, which many of you know. So I'll go through our presentation as we have done in the past, and I'll try and I won't belabor too much the physical side of things too much because you've obviously seen the quarterly report come out, and we'll get on into the financials and then the discussion then after. But thanks for making the time. Look, I think as everybody knew, 2016 was always going to be an important year for Whitehaven, and certainly it's the first year, if you like, post-construction that really a plan that was put in place at the time the merger occurred back in May of 2012, which saw Maules Creek come into the group. But what you should see this year is certainly Narrabri performing very well in full swing. Construction for Maules Creek is largely complete. The rest of the operations performing their role really is the bedrock of the business, and all of these operations operating at a level which is on a significantly rebased cost base when you consider where we were back at the time of that merger, let alone what we've achieved since that time. So for us, the business is showing clear signs of what operations should be like post that construction period, and it certainly finished the first half consistent with where we ended up the last half of 2015, and that is a glimpse of profit in that last half of 2015, and certainly as we have guided, profit in this first half after tax in the first half of 2016. So a very good start to the year. So over to the highlights. Look, there's been many during this period, but I'll just call out a couple. Clearly, that return to profitability is the major signpost of the future in terms of where we want to drive this business going forward. The importance of this, I think, is far greater than the size of the individual profit itself. Obviously, we're operating in a part of the cycle which is pretty challenging, but to be able to turn a profit after tax in this point in the cycle, I think, does mark Whitehaven out as quite a unique proposition in our industry. EBITDA, as we foreshadowed, came in just slightly above our guidance, which is very good and certainly double what we did last year in the previous corresponding period and some 80% already of what we did for the total of the year last year just at the halfway mark. So that's very good. Cost reductions again at the top of our guidance, which is good, and we'll talk a little bit later about what we can do for the balance of the year. Cash flow generation has been very good. As you know, we had an unwind of creditors from the construction of Maules, so we paid some of those, and we've given you some numbers that point to that, and also the one-off tax payment that many of you talked about at length would have known went out in July. So even after that, at the end of the day, we've put money in the bank, and certainly that was the guidance that we gave, and certainly this is just the beginnings of what we see as the ability to delever the business over the coming halves and put the business in a position where we're a more balanced business with a lower gearing ratio and certainly able in the future to capitalize on the lower point of the cycle. Over to our safety, and as you know, safety is always front of mind for us, and we've done very, very well in keeping a downward trajectory in our safety stats over the last few years. But inevitably, as the manning of the business has increased substantially and the complexity of our business has changed dramatically, that improvement momentum has plateaued. We're not satisfied with that. In fact, just being less than the industry average is not really satisfying at all for us. So we are redoubling our efforts and refocusing to make sure that we can continue the improvement pathway that we've demonstrated, even on this larger scale of business that we've got. As I say, the operations themselves, the physicals, you would be well aware of those given the December quarterly report only a few weeks ago, so I'll only just go across those briefly. The sales, as you know, some 52% up period on period is a strong endorsement of the quality of the coal that we're bringing to the market. I think the appetite for this coal is very, very good, and certainly the premiums that we're starting to achieve now is certainly evidence of the acceptance of the quality that we're bringing into the right markets. The performance basically for the first half is in line with our own expectations for ourselves and certainly in line with the guidance that we've given for the full year. ROM coal production, I think again, 59% over period on period is a good result. But I think if I look at this slide in particular and look at the spread of our production across those three buckets that we've mentioned there, from Maules Creek, Narrabri, and the Gunnedah Ops, it's actually looking like a much better balanced business now from a risk perspective. Narrabri was, when we only had Narrabri without Maules, such a large proportion of the business relative to the whole and the risk profile of an underground mine tilted the risk profile of the business a little bit away from where we wanted to be. But certainly that was only a point in time observation, because as Maules Creek came on, that risk balance certainly transitions nicely over to two-thirds the operations just at today's production rates from open cut operations. And really what that does is secure the future for the business, because longwall mines, as you know, run great when they're running great. But we've got now this large proportion of our production out of the open cuts to complement, what's a fantastic mine in Narrabri going forward. So a much better balanced risk proposition for us going forward. And if we're looking period on period, clearly the differentiator for us has been Maules Creek. And the mine's ramped up really well, and at the December point, you're aware that we hit the annualised rate of 8.5 million tonnes per annum. So that ramp up has been very, very positive. As I said, the coal quality has been warmly welcomed by the market. The premiums are at 7% on average for the half is very, very good. And met coal's sales are already starting to improve. So that's quite good, about 750,000 tonnes of met coal sales committed already. So, and that's in line with our ramp up also, that we said the proportion would be about 15% overall in the first 12 months of operations, commercial operations, and that's certainly on track to do that. Cost behaviour at $58 for Maules, I think, is a very good result. We said that once we've got the mine up and running, we'll be able to drive costs down, and I think this is really just the start of that process. As the mine gets bigger, the efficiencies improve. We put big gear into the mine from the very start, and that was a great decision in terms of the access and cost of that equipment. But the mine needed to be a little bigger, as you know, in order to properly fit that big gear in it, and it certainly is that now. And construction is largely complete, and I think this is an important fact for us. We spent some $701 million on a 100% basis on the project, and it's largely done. We're going to keep $15 million up our sleeve for permanent maintenance workshops and admin buildings, but we don't need to spend that money now. I mean, what we've got in place at the moment is entirely sufficient for our needs, but as those needs transition over the next 3 years, we will put in place the permanent fixtures that are required. And it's really just us, and many of you have been to our sites. They're not gold-plated sites. They're fit for purpose, and we don't spend a dollar if we don't need to. And that same approach is being applied to this. But by June, we look like we'll run a ruler off on this project, and in terms of closing the construction project in our books, and the decisions that will be made on how we deploy and when we deploy that balance of $15 million will largely be an operations decision rather than a construction project call. And what that means really is about $45 to $50 million in contingency that we haven't had to deploy, given that we've managed the construction of this project very well. And importantly for Maules Creek, and as we've always known that there was plenty of upside left in this project, and it's only at its beginning, but we will embark on a project in this next 6 months to expand the reserve of this project. We know we've got a hell of a lot of data on the balance of the reserve of the resource, and we believe there's a significant portion of that resource that we can bring into the reserve category. Over on Narrabri, look, that really has gone from strength to strength, as you know, and it's interesting just to think that it was only commissioned in November of 2012, and already it's one of the top three mines in the country. Certainly the calendar stats, as we've mentioned, over 8 million tonnes for the calendar year certainly is a significant achievement. But the key takeaways here, just obviously the cost performance of $49 is excellent, but we know it can do better, so we're going to keep driving that. The production, as I mentioned, 8.3 in that calendar year is fabulous. We do have a change out at the end of this financial year, as you know, but you can certainly see what the annualised capacity of this mine is, even before we go to the 400 metre face. And very pleasingly, and a tick and a nod to the government for their improvement in their processes to some degree, we lodged an approval, obviously, to increase the production capacity of Narrabri from 8 million tonnes per annum ROM to 11 million tonnes per annum ROM, and that approval came in just prior to Christmas, which is a pretty snappy turnaround, and also approves, obviously, all the projects necessary for the 400 metre face extension. So just to remind people what the benefit of that particular project is, we estimate that will be about 750,000 tonnes per year of incremental production and about a $3 to $4 per tonne reduction in our costs at Narrabri. So certainly well worth doing for what is a modest spend with about a year and a half payback. But Narrabri is not finished, and in fact there's plenty of potential here for Narrabri to continue on well past the existing declared reserve. So the face extension is a no-brainer, as we say, a very good project. But beyond that, you're well aware that we do have the Narrabri South lease. And so we're starting a project to incorporate what we've already done at a high level, the conceptual integration of the southern panels of Narrabri North into panels in the Narrabri South lease. So you'll see that we'll report on this from time to time to give you an update on the progress of this, but it is an exciting project for, you know, what's going to be a very material extension to the life of our Narrabri project. And the Gunnedah operations, as I said, that really have been the bedrock of our business, and it's very pleasing to see that they continue to underpin the business in this half. Production has been pretty steady period on period, and safety has just been outstanding, certainly has led the way in terms of the overall group's performance. As we go through this period, as you know, these are the older historic operations and do run at a cost higher than the two newer operations. But even in these difficult price environments, we've certainly been EBITDA positive across all of those operations, which I think is a significant achievement for all the teams on the ground running those assets. So from a financial performance perspective, we've turned in what is a pretty respectable set of results here. I think profit in the first half, albeit modest, 12.8 pre-tax and 7.8 after-tax. So I think, it's like I say, symbolically it's important, but it's certainly just a signpost to the future, and this is just the beginning of where we're going. EBITDA, as I said, has been a fantastic result, more than double this period last year. The continued focus on cost will drive a greater result in the future. $58 is very good, but we're not resting on our laurels. We think there's more to come there. And the cash flow generation, as I mentioned, the one-off payments, if you took those out, we would have reduced our debt by some $50-odd million, $56 million even further. But those things were known, they had to be done, but it really does point to the second half. Absent those things, what do we think we can do in terms of further debt reduction period on period? So over on the P&L, there's just more colour there for you. I think that's a good set of results. Average price has come down a little bit, but average cost has certainly come down. And if you look at, if you cast your mind back a little bit, average price has come down some $7, but average cost has come down some $11 when you look back into the 14 period. Margins in A-dollar terms and US dollar terms have both come down, but they have been relatively stable through this half, which is good. And in fact, prompt tonnages are going better than what you'd see at the GC Nuke index as we speak. And of course, you always need to add on to the top of our realised pricing the 7% that I've mentioned the premiums are achieving at this time. So as I say, cost performance has been fantastic. If you look back at 2014, as I say, $7 down per tonne on revenue, but $11 down on cost. And I think that's really been part of the story of Whitehaven, what we've been able to do over the last 3 or 4 years, in fact. To rebase the cost of the business down to a position where we're able to maintain margins in the face of what's been a pretty soft revenue market overall. And as much as I think the Australian industry has done pretty well in doing this and getting costs out, I think we've done very, very well relative to the Australian average as a whole. The important part of this, I think, is just to reflect on the fact that as we grow, each of the tonnes that we're bringing on from now on in are tonnes which come in at better margin than what we're declaring today. So we're not bringing more tonnes in out of Tarrawonga or Rocklin or Werris. We're actually bringing more tonnes in out of Narrabri and Maules Creek, and they are coming in at a higher average margin than what we report to you today. So as that further volume comes, you get the benefit of the better margins that stem from that. On to our balance sheet. Again, the manifestation of a pretty good outcome for the first 6 months. We've put cash in the bank. Reflecting of an improving financial position of the company. We made all those one-off payments, as you know, which is certainly nice to put those behind us. We'll see more clear air in the second half in terms of the payments that we need to make for Maules Creek, The balance of the payments to creditors, just for your knowledge, the balance of payments of creditors in the second half will be about $6 million our share. Oh, sorry, $8 million our share. So not a big number, and certainly less than the first half. And obviously, there's no other one-offs that we're aware of that we need to factor in here. So debt reduction will be greater in the second half than it has been in the first. Now, the analysis that we did put there is that based on the existing margins that we know, and if we're projecting out 3 or 4 years, and we're just trying to paint a picture for you in terms of debt reduction capacity that the business has, in 3 or 4 years, we estimate between $300 and $500 million of free cash flow that could be used for debt reduction. So certainly turned the corner in terms of the construction phase and the outflow of capital, and now into the period of where we'll pay that and rebalance the business to a position of gearing that we're comfortable with. The structure of debt of the facility is well known to everybody, I think, but what we've also included in the back slides and certainly the statements here that we've had a lot of questions about our balance sheet and certainly the ICR and other covenants that relate to the facility, but I will make the statement to you that if you used the ICR covenant now and applied it to our business today, we would more than comfortably exceed the threshold required for compliance under the ICR, more than comfortably. So we've told you all that at the quarter that the initial ICR starts at a 2 and ramps up to a 3 once Maules Creek continues to ramp up. And that was done on purpose, obviously, to sculpt it in a way that was reflective of the ramp up of the business. So as you can see from the numbers here, we're well and truly in compliance. If they were applied today, of course, they don't apply until December 16. 12 months looking back, but that's a very comfortable position for us to be in. In terms of capital allocation, sustaining capex has been lower than what we've guided in the past, and we've been judiciously applying that. Not with any short-term risks attached to that. It's just really us metering out the capex as we see fit, and making sure that we maintain the productive capacity of the business. The Narrabri mains expenditure, as you know, continues on for a couple of years and will finish in 2019, but they're a life of mine asset and need to continue on, and we're funding that comfortably through our capex. We provide a little bit more colour there just in terms of the face extension project, so we've given you the total numbers in the narrative on the right-hand side of that slide, and as you can see in the body of there, we've actually already spent some of that money necessary. So whilst the total numbers are there at $56 million and how it'll be funded, we've actually already spent a number of nearly $14 million of that already, so you can tuck that away, and it's really just the balance to be expended over the rest of this project. So all in all, pretty good set of numbers in terms of the financial performance. On our community engagement, you know that we're the largest employer in the area and we're the largest city contributor financially or economically in the region, so we do take this very seriously. You know, since 2012, when the merger occurred, we've spent some $840 million in the local community. This half alone is over $60 million injected into the community, which has been a great boon for the people in the area. Our Aboriginal engagement, as you know, has been a particular focus for us. 50 Aboriginal people at Maules Creek has been a tremendous result. But also, gender diversity has also been given a fantastic boost with 14% now at Maules Creek as well. So we're excited about what the prospects of these initiatives mean for the rest of the group, but certainly, from our perspective, it's certainly deepening our connection with the community in the area, and in fact, as we've said before, you'll see us open up an office in Gunnedah as our regional presence, so we'll have a physical focal point there for all the people who have regional roles in the area. On to our outlook. So I thought it would be just timely just to make a few comments just about coal and in the post-COP21 period, and just look at some of the aspects of what came out of the lead-up to that, and then also the couple of weeks meetings themselves. So look, there's no doubt that many of the NDCs submitted by the various nations around the world incorporate a continued use, and in fact many an expanding use, of coal going forward. And certainly in our region that was certainly the case. If you summed up all those NDCs and looked at the growth in coal-fired electricity generation, the prediction is from 2013 to 2040 to be some 24% increase in coal-fired generation over that period. Now, in our region, those numbers are significantly more than 24%, as we'll get to in a little bit. So coal is certainly part of the mix for a long time to come, and as we've said in the past, it's not really about one fuel or the other. All fuels all fuel sources will remain important pieces of the mix as we go forward. The role of the high emissions, low emissions technology, otherwise the ultra supercritical and supercritical power stations that we're seeing deployed in our region, was certainly recognised during the COP21 meetings, and the role of that, and importantly the funding of those particular investments in the latest generation of coal-fired generation, certainly got a kick along as a result of the OECD agreement that was released just prior to COP21 starting, where there are incentives for countries, particularly in our region, to adopt the highest level of thermal efficiency technology when building new coal-fired power stations. And we can talk to that also a little bit. But in the end, it was recognised that perhaps the incentive regime for renewables has drawn the lion's share of the funding, and that CCS and also HELE had not received its proportion of subsidies in recent times, and that needed to be addressed. In fact, COP21 and the IEA have recognised explicitly that in order to meet the targets that they're looking to achieve, CCS has to actually come to the fore and play a meaningful role in the future. And if you haven't been funding it proportionately, as you have been funding renewables, then that needs to change if that is your stated objective. So I think that was a very clear message to come out of COP21 and the more recent IEA pronouncements. But if you look in our area, why do we say all this? Well, we can look at the power station build-out in our region, and clearly that's going to drive strong underlying demand. Our high-energy, low-sulfur, low-ash coal is certainly being welcomed in our region, and it certainly complements the rollout of supercritical and ultra-supercritical technology that underpins the build-out of power stations that you see in these graphs here. I know you've seen these graphs before, so I won't belabor it too much, but what it's going to drive, the regulation around emissions will drive a continual drive for better quality coal, and that benefits Australia as a whole, there's no doubt about it, but it certainly benefits Whitehaven differentially because, our coal is some of the best thermal coal in the world, and so we stand to benefit disproportionately from that. The premiums that I mentioned to you before are just evidence of that recognition of the quality of our coal and the increasing underlying demand that we're experiencing for it. But even our most mature markets are certainly expanding, and Japan and Korea are certainly being two of those, which is good to see. And why are they doing that? I think the simple fact is that it is, of course, coal the most widespread, most reliable, lowest risk and lowest cost of form of generation that you can install. And all these economies recognise that fact, and obviously they're situated proximate to reliable long-term sources of this coal, such as Australia, and that very much underpins these 30 to 50 year type decisions they're making in installing new power stations. But China has changed quite a bit in terms of its not just its overarching consumption of coal, but its participation in the seaborne market. They have reduced their imports substantially, and as we've said before, we thought Indonesia would bear the brunt of that transition, and that's certainly been the case. And it's quite an interesting mirror image that as China has reduced its imports by virtue of these new policies that are reducing or implying new quality tests and also import restrictions from a quota system, that Indonesia certainly has had to adjust itself very quickly to accommodate that change. The impact on the Australian producers has been less because we weren't as big a proportion of as a seller into China as Indonesia was, obviously. And in Whitehaven's case, we're not selling coal to China, so we don't participate directly in that area, but obviously the global supply oversupply situation at the moment certainly is pervasive in the price we're receiving for coal today. So we look at our outlook and our growth. This growth path has been pretty consistent over the last couple of years. This slide, you're probably all sick of seeing this one, but it's certainly been consistent and we're on track to deliver it. And I think that's important. We're getting far better margins for the far better quality that we're bringing on, and we're putting those tonnes into the right markets. And I think that's the most important aspect of this. Extra volume with greater margins means more profits and certainly is our first priority, a stronger capacity to deliver in the short term. Our Narrabri mine obviously has plenty of upside, as we've mentioned, and there's a far greater amount of that to come. Maules Creek, in terms of its expansion and those orange pieces of that slide, is really a low-risk expansion option. It really just is more mobile equipment, as all the infrastructure to be able to manage the 13 million tonnes per annum run rate is already built, as we said, we've done that substantially cheaper than what was already a very competitive total cost budget for that project. So we see this growth really quite reliable, quite low risk, and as I say, more volume with higher margin tons increases our capacity to deliver in the future. And all of that is without considering the upside of our Vickery project on top of that as well. And just a quick update on that, we, as you know, we are doing a lot of work to submit a revised EIS for another approval for Vickery. As you all know, it's approved to 4.5 million tonnes already. But we are upscaling that project now to 10 million tonnes, and we look to submit an EIS consistent with that in June of this year. But this brings into our pipeline another large-scale, high-quality coal deposit that could be a significant step up in volume for the group as a whole once Maules Creek is fully ramped. So in terms of overall outlook and our guidance, so what do we see for the period ahead? Safety, clearly we're not satisfied with our performance to date. I mean, better than industry is great, but you know, we need to be better than what we are, so we're going to continue to focus on that over the next 6 months to regain that improvement momentum that we've seen in more recent times. Our outlook for ROM production we have uplifted, as you know, so we are now talking the range of 19.5 to 20.1 million tonnes. As I say, Maules Creek and Narrabri will continue to deliver more tonnes of higher margin, so the right tonnes going to the right position on the cost curve, certainly going into the right markets, and those premiums bear that out. We will continue to drive costs in the second half, so another $1 or $2 on top of the $58 per tonne that we've got at the moment is our expectation for the second half of this year, and this is certainly a point of focus which we're not going to give up on. And as I mentioned, with these margins and these extra tonnes, our debt reduction capacity certainly looks a whole lot better, and at 300 to 500 million tonnes of free cash flow available for debt reduction over the next 3 or 4 years, that certainly stands us in a very good position financially. So thanks for all for taking the time. I think we've delivered a pretty good outcome for the first 6 months. It's just the beginning. We obviously need to bring the second half of the year home consistent with the first. It will be a better half. Volumetrically, we're going to produce more tonnes in the second half than we did in the first, and we're going to do those incremental tonnes at better margin, as I mentioned. But thanks for your support for the first half. We look forward to that continued support as we report back to you over the next two quarters as we round out the full year. Back to the operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone. And you do have a question coming from the line of Paul Young. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, gents. I'm on. First of all, Paul, thanks for all the additional information on CapEx, balance sheet covenants. It's really appreciated.
No problem.
Now, the first question I have is actually on the costs. I know I've asked this in the past, but I think your approach of being conservative and under-promising, and it's clearly working, and I think that's great, but looking at your costs for the half, particularly at Maules Creek at $58 a tonne, I mean, you're ramping up, and yet your guidance for the full year previously was 61 to 62, so you beat there by $3 a tonne. And at Narrabri, you had a long change out, and yet those costs are $49 a tonne, and that was a great performance. So just thinking, trying to match it up with your guidance of, further $1 to $2 a tonne drop in the second half, with respect to the fact that Maules Creek's now running at full capacity and Narrabri will, have a clean run. Just maybe get some thoughts on that. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Paul. Look, Maules Creek, as you know, I mean, it's only 6 months in terms of commercial operation, so we're certainly, learning a lot about the ways in which we can drive this asset harder. So as you know, we didn't want to make foolish claims about what we thought we could do in advance of actually, operating the thing in a commercial form. So the 61, 62 number we gave you before certainly was the number we thought we could achieve. But as we're testing the boundaries of what we're able to achieve there on site, we're able to drive our costs down even further. That improvement in this period should give you some confidence about our ability to deliver the guidance in the second half. Narrabri certainly has performed very, very well. And look, the change out in the half, conceptually or theoretically, shouldn't actually drive a big change, in the cost behaviour for the mine, because, as you know, the change out costs are deferred and amortised over the tonnes that come out of the panel. So that should already be incorporated in it as you obviously confront another change out at the end of this year. We had stock on the stockpiles to be able to sell right through the change out, as you know, and we'll certainly do that again as we address the change out that's going to start in the last quarter of this year. So look, I think we certainly, the numbers we put out, we don't put them out unless we think we can do them, and that's been our way. I think $1 or $2 per tonne across the whole group, that is, and don't forget it's not just Maules Creek, this is an impact across the whole group. We think we can deliver in the second half.
Look forward to seeing the number beaten again. The second question, Paul, is actually on your segmentals. So of your more detailed accounts, Appendix 4D, and on page 15 on the segmental reporting, you've actually got an unallocated line there of an EBITDA of negative $12 million. And you've got a note there, it's probably one for Kevin, but it includes contract discounts and coal trading. That number's a bit bigger than I was looking for. I just wondering if you could just expand on that a little bit more, and should we consider that sort of number to continue going forward?
Yeah, I'll just let Kevin dig into this. This is nothing new, Paul, in our business. This is really just us drawing something out and separating out for separate disclosure. But Kevin, address that?
It's also got in there, it's also got your corporate in there as well, because the underground and open cut operations are those. And the change in there is around a little bit of sundry revenue. So I would think that number, you wouldn't expect to see that turn up in the second half that same size.
Same majority as the actual head office costs?
A fair chunk of it is, Paul, yeah. Yeah. If you go back to the front page of the P&L, you'll see there's about $12 million in admin costs. Right.
Yep.
I think administration expense is 9.1. All right. And then the other half is about 11.2. So there'll just be other income coming through there. The first half in 14 had about $7 million in other income, and that'll be coming through there as well to offset it in the previous set of numbers.
Yeah, no problem, Kevin. And lastly, that comment on includes contract discounts. Can you expand on that?
As you know, when Whitehaven came to market originally, there was a contract there with a client that has an embedded discount, and that discount comes through that line rather than being burdened on the mining operations.
Thanks. I'll pass it on. Cheers.
And your next question comes from the line of Peter O'Connor. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. Congratulations. A good set of numbers. Well done. Look, I've got two questions. Firstly, on Vickery, what thought have you given to an earlier sale and maybe an option-based sale where you seek your JV sell down sooner with respect to the process with the government ongoing, but trying to structure a price so you can get a deal up front? And I ask this with the view of the market in mind, that people want you to retire debt sooner or generate more net debt reduction sooner. Is that something you've given thought to, or is it really worth waiting for the full government approvals before you go out to market?
Yeah. Thanks, Peter. Yeah, look. This is a good question, because we contemplate this ourselves and have addressed it with discussions with various parties already. Our judgment is, though, that the project in its current approved form, the numbers given the pricing that we see today, in its current approved form, just aren't compelling. And so the expansion of the project delivers significant upside in terms of the economics of the Vickery project. So the movement onto the rail and on-site processing, not to mention the related benefits that's going to have for Tarrawonga, say, for instance, we'll put that aside just for the moment, those additions are really quite compelling and certainly makes us think that it's better to just wait a little while longer. It won't be too long, because we're going to lodge this EIS in June, and we said once that's lodged, then we would open up the process. So it's not long to wait before we get to that point. But underlying some of the concerns, I have to say, of potential participants in a Vickery joint venture are what essentially are overseas parties expressing uncertainty around the regulatory framework in Australia, and so their concern is that approvals aren't as easy to get in Australia as what they used to be, and that they would rather, happy to pay for something that's approved in that form, but the options that they're willing to contemplate pre-approval, you know, have heavy discounts applied to them in the same way that I suppose the equity market is applying discounts to the value of equity today. So there's my answer, Peter.
Okay, and just secondly, and of a similar vein, now I've drunk your Kool-Aid. I kind of get where you're going, and I said I congratulate you on what you've done, so well done. What do you do next? You've managed operations, you've managed the finances, you're running the business very, very well. The share price is clearly not telling us that. What's the disconnect? What do you do next as a team trying to fulfill your duty to shareholders to maximise returns? I know the share price should follow when you deliver, but thoughts on what you do, where you go, and trying to bridge that disconnect between the two?
Yeah. Look, it's a perplexing issue, as you can see. I mean, we're not the only one in this basket, as you know. And you know, I think we're executing pretty well. And so the underlying strength of the business is improving all the time. We're certainly exploring all means to make sure that we can bridge that gap. I think we're certainly in there's a bearish sentiment around the coal thematic generally. We hear the noise of people talking about, in our instance in particular, capital raisings and the like and so on like that. I mean, clearly that's, you can see that by the basis of the numbers that we're disclosing, that the business is able to fend for itself and will de-lever naturally through the operations as we expand the business. So there certainly is a disconnect. It's frustrating for us and our shareholders. We want to see our shareholders receive better value. It's annoying that transactions in the marketplace evidence better values, but it seems like, you know, at times no one wants to recognise those values unless you're trading an asset. So, but I think that won't last, and that will change, and the underlying value of the business will emerge. And certainly we don't want to do anything silly, and our shareholders are saying to us, don't do anything silly that's of a short-term nature, just because of the disconnect that you've pointed to.
Thanks, Paul.
And your next question comes from the line of Paul McTaggart. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul. Just a quick one. The 7% premium you're getting out of Newcastle for Maules Creek, is that just energy adjustment, or are you finding that you're also getting value for, you know, having lower ash levels? And if that's the case, do you think we can do better in terms of, you know, as this coal gets to be known better, do you think we can squeeze out a better premium through time?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yeah, look, I absolutely do. So those premiums are widening out quite nicely, in fact. So certainly it's not just the energy benefit, which is, as you know, is, you know, we'll put in 200 or 300 points over the 6,000, so there's part of it. But then on top of that, you're getting, you know, at the low point, you know, $2 US a tonne, and at the higher point, you're sort of seeing at times even $5 US a tonne on top of that. So that's been a pretty solid outcome. And but we do see those spreads improving over time for a range of reasons, not just our customers struggling to find a sufficient level of quality that they want, but also, as we've talked about this before, you've got people in the market looking to sweeten up cargoes to get into other markets, and certainly we're a reliable source of the coal that can do that. So look, it's been very good. That's certainly been very pleasing to see. The market acceptance for a brand new mine in Maules Creek improving. Having said that, the margins also on our Narrabri, which is better understood because it's now been operating 3 years, the premiums that we're receiving there are also improving, which is underpinning this whole premium calculation. As you know, that'll just improve as we are able to penetrate the market even further into the semi-soft of PCI market, because I think that's the other part of this equation that often gets overlooked, because, you know, even at semi-soft prices today, that's still a very compelling thing for us to do, to move as many tons as we can into the semi-soft and PCI market, given, you know, obviously the low yield losses that we have when we wash our coal.
And can I just follow up with a quick clarification? In the presentation, we say that the Gunnedah open cuts are EBITDA positive. Is that inclusive, that EBITDA is inclusive of royalties, or is that kind of on a pre-royalties basis?
No, that's post-royalties.
Hmm.
That's it.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
Yep, no problem.
And your next question comes from the line of Lyndon Fagan. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Just a couple from me. The first one, can you provide some CapEx guidance for the next half and possibly for FY17?
Lyndon, what we've said in the past is a buck a tonne for the open cuts, and you need to put aside $2 for the underground. You've got guidance already just on the Narrabri mains, because that will continue in the second half, so that's in addition to that. But we haven't given any guidance for 17 explicitly, but there's nothing major other than the face extension, which again we've given you some numbers so you can work out what flows out there into the 17 year. I mean, this is all going to be built by about April 2017, so there's not a long tail here for you to project out.
Okay, great. And second question I've got is, I guess the longer-term production profile at Maules, the guidance is to get to 50-50 met thermal, but just sort of wondering how confident you are about increasing that met coal production given the current state of markets and whether that sort of guidance is under review at all.
No, certainly not under review, no. Certainly, and the sign-up, of supply agreements already at 750,000 for met coal already for Maules Creek underpins our guidance. What we're seeing actually in the end user market is the proportion of blending the semi-soft into the coke mix is actually increasing. And so it's quite interesting at the moment. You see quite a strong rebound in semi-soft prompt tonnages. They look very much like the index price at the moment. Whereas before, the spot market was seeing, you know, quite a differential between the index and what you get for prompt tonnages. So, and in our business dynamic, as I mentioned just to Paul, we can produce the premium coals. Washing, we don't have anything to fear from washing. Washing yields are very high with us. Washing costs are very low with us. There's more margin in a semi-soft and PCI ton than there is in our thermal tons. So certainly we're not minded to wind back our aspiration, if you like, in terms of where we think we can take this, because there's nothing in the physical market that says we should.
Okay, great. And just one final question. Obviously, you've been talking about a potential sell down of Vickery, but if coal markets were to take another nosedive, would you consider selling part of either Maules or Narrabri?
Look, I think if prices had another leg down, and obviously that would be challenging for lots of people, probably challenging for lots of people in a way much more extreme than what it would be for us. But of course, that would be difficult, and I think if that was to occur, we would evaluate all sensible options.
All right, thanks, guys.
And once again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, that's 0 followed by 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. And there are no further questions coming through at this time.
A couple of questions off the net. Why are selling and distribution expenses up by almost 50% from the prior half? Kevin?
Well, the simple answer for that is that the tonnage that we sold was up 52%, but the cost was only up 44%. And that selling and distribution cost is port and rail and all the costs in moving it post-pit to put it over the bow of the boat.
And the second one is, will the interest expense remain at around $34 million per half, assuming debt levels remain unchanged?
We've given a little bit more colour around the interest expense and the net financial expense. It's a combination of the amortised costs and some other things that are in there and the actual interest. And when you look at the interest expense itself, in note 6, you'll find that the interest we actually pay is going to end up about mid-50s. And then there's some amortised costs on top of that, and then there's some other accounting. Jiggery-pokery is not the right word, but it's close enough to description, which is interest on mines, on rehabilitation provisions and some other things that are all on cash. So note 6 to those accounts, I think, gives you far more detail on the breakup of that and helps to provide you some colour around what net interest should look like for a half and for a year. Today, the margin is the debt's at its peak, so we would expect interest to fall over time as we de-lever. And the current, it's a margin over a swap rate, so that swap rate currently is about 200 basis points. If that changes, then our interest changes again.
Yeah, I think just to add to Kevin's explanation there, is just that absent an interest rate change, which obviously is a market-wide thing, absent that change, our interest costs at the moment are at their peak.
Yeah, sure.
The debt has peaked. 30 June 2015 debt, the drawdown of that facility at $900 million, that is the peak. And so the financing costs that come with that have peaked. But what hasn't peaked is our ability to meet those costs. And that comes with more tonnes at better margins. So our capacity to actually manage this, and you can already see the conceptual, the theoretical calculation we've already put in that slide, our capacity to deal with this and meet our covenants is very good. And it only gets better as we throw off more tonnes from these two low-cost mines that brings better margins.
Nothing else.
All right, operator, it looks like it's the balance of questions that we've seen on the screen. So if you've got no further questions, then
we've just actually had one pop in. We do have a question from Philip Chippendale. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the extra couple of questions. Just firstly, just on the Narrabri, the next longwall change out there, can you just give some rough guidance as to the timing on that? I don't think you mentioned that in the call.
Yeah, Jamie?
Yeah, just on the next longwall change, we expect that to start probably the last week in April. So typically what we've seen in the past is that is normally complete in the 6 weeks or slightly shorter than the 6 weeks time frame. So we do see that we'll be up and running and producing in June, and there'll be some more tonnes coming into this financial year when we complete that longwall change.
Great. And just finally, just the time frame for the expenditure on the balance of the capex for the 400 metre wide face at Narrabri.
Yeah, well, as Paul mentioned earlier, you know, that project is due. I mean, we'll see that 400-metre longwall face start in April of 2017, so that capital is starting around about now already. We've sort of made some pre-commitments to the long lead items for that expense. Yeah, so that'll start from now and will tail out, you know, through April 17. You know, the balance will be completed by April 17.
I think the numbers there are about 14. Yeah. We spent 14 already of the 56 total cost to us for that project.
Correct.
Funded, you know, in a combination of the ECA and cash from operational cash flows. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a major thing. You know, Philip, you could probably draw a straight line with that between now and the April 17 time in terms of the outflows.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So about 40 mil over 15 months.
Yeah. Partially, as we right. said in that guide, from the ECA and then part from the cash flow.
Thank you. That's it.
And no further audio questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, operator. We might draw that to a close. Of course, if there are any other questions, you know where to find us. But thanks again for your attendance, and we'll look forward to catching you up over the coming days and months. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference for today. We thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.